Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles, fired up for a Friday show. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, our playoff Blazing Five, our official last Blazing Five of the year. We are packed today. Joy Taylor is joining me in a Friday. This is one of the last great Fridays of the year where you got four huge games. It's the last big football weekend until, like, next year. We got four massive games. Then it's down to two. Then it's down to one. Exciting.
This is a huge weekend.
It's a huge weekend. I got a long story. I had to do some traveling last night. I want one sip of Red Bull before we start the show. Hold on.
You're starting the morning with Red Bull?
It's delicious. Not great for your teeth, but delicious.
That is aggressive.
Okay, that is very aggressive move by me. I want to start with this. I do not believe over the course of a 70, 80-year life, luck plays any part in your life. I don't. Even if you have a bad childhood, 18 years, you're out of the house, your choices will dictate your life. Who do you marry? Who do you hang out with? What jobs you take? What jobs you turn down? If you had a bad childhood, are you willing to go into therapy? I don't think luck plays a part in life. Good breaks, bad breaks. But the reason luck does not play part in people's lives over the course of 70 or 80 years is because you have 40 to 50 years to overcome childhood chaos if things are kind of messed up early. And nobody had a perfect childhood. You didn't. I didn't. Joy probably didn't. I know Goulet, Ktui. Those guys are crazy. Okay, nobody had a perfect life. But I don't think luck plays a part in your life when you have a 75, 80 year life. But what if your life was 14 years? That was it. Beginning to end. You would not have the time to overcome chaos, abuse, dysfunction. 12, 13, 14 years is the lifespan of an NFL franchise quarterback. And therefore, luck plays a part in it. Bad ownership. Three coaches fired in 4 years. There's a lot of things you could not overcome. You simply don't have the time to overcome it. This weekend, Tom Brady, the luckiest quarterback of all time, will face Phillip Rivers, the unluckiest great quarterback of all time. This is in no way to in any way dilute the greatness of Brady. He would have been great anywhere. But I doubt the greatest of all time if he'd not been rather lucky. And this is not to say Phillip Rivers would be the greatest of all time, but he'd have more playoff wins. In life, the shorter it is, the less you can overcome. What if Tom was a Charger and Philip was a Patriot? Think about Tom's career. He is drafted by, now, inarguably, the greatest football coach of all time. He lands with, arguably, the top owner in professional sports in America, Bob Kraft. He is drafted into a hyper-competitive, hyper-academic city. The Boston Bruins, the Red Sox, the Patriots, the Celtics, all MIT, Harvard, all highly competitive. Sports matters in Boston. Billionaires competing against other billionaires to be smarter, more analytic-driven. It is not a coincidence. The Red Sox, the Bruins, the Patriots, the Celtics, all way, way above the curve on analytics. Sports matters. Tom is drafted by the greatest coach, one of the smartest, most empirically powerful owners and stable ownership groups in a sports city where everything matters. And oh, by the way, gets to play in a division with three other dysfunctional teams. Jets, Bills, Dolphins. Another break. The NFL in 2002 realigned divisions. Peyton Manning would have been in Tom Brady's division. He ended up in something now called the AFC South. Think that would have changed Tom Brady's career? Let's now talk about Phillip Rivers. Four head coaches. His first one fired after a year. The ownership, and I'll say this nicely, has been historically frugal. The city in San Diego, surfing is number one. Win, lose, nobody's losing sleep. You don't have the passion, the drive, the competitive four different professional sports teams, four different billionaires, all trying to beat each other. In a division with Denver, one of the better NFL franchises, and oh, by the way, Kansas City as well, perennially, they're in the playoffs or close to it. And oh, by the way, Phillips having his best year. And true to form, his franchise moves to a city and plays in a soccer stadium. Luck plays very little part if you live a long and extensive life. It doesn't. Don't blame mom and dad. If at 58 you're a mess, that's on you. You could have chosen therapy, a better partner, better friends, and better locations. But over the course of a 14-year life, the span of an NFL quarterback, you simply would not have the time to overcome chaos and dysfunction, bitterness, family squabbles. Brady would have been great anyway, but he would not be the GOAT without a series of lucky breaks. And Philip Rivers would not be Brady, but would be much closer. Luck matters a great deal at quarterback in the National Football League. It won't define you, but it elevates or slightly erodes. That is not arguable. All right, let me shift to this. The Dallas Cowboys against the Rams. It'll be on Fox. That's our network. We can't wait for it. It's going to be interesting. I think Dallas has better players. I think Dallas, since Amari Cooper showed up, is a much better team than the Rams, who lost their best receiver, Cooper Kupp. There's been great debate this year. What is Dak Prescott? Troy Aikman was talking about Dak Prescott, and he believes, like I do, he's a grown-up, limited perhaps, but he's a grown-up. Here's Troy on Dak.
He's a great leader. He's everything you'd want him to be. Don't know that... there's a more solid individual in the National Football League. And then what he's done on the field, I think that he has shown an ability to win games late. And that's a quality not everybody has. And he's shown to have that even in games when he's not necessarily played his best. And I think that's the greatest quality.
Okay, so I agree with that. But I'm going to give you a series of traits. Pretty mobile, above average. Joy, that sounds like Dak, right? Wins a lot. Arm is average, at times a liability. Not a big risk taker. He's a very solid leader. Smart, appears to be very coachable, great in front of the mic. And his best year, had a great defense. That is not Dak Prescott. That's Alex Smith. And if I say Dak, we've seen him before, it's Alex Smith, you wince. You don't like to hear that. But can I remind you that Alex Smith has had eight straight winning seasons, has been a Pro Bowler three times, has three division titles and five playoff appearances. Cowboy fan, you would buy that in a New York minute if I offered that this morning. We have seen Dak. It's Alex Smith. And he wins. And he gets to the Pro Bowl occasionally. Every couple years, he wins his division. He gets to the playoffs about half of his career. That's Dak. And you don't like to hear that. Because what Alex Smith isn't Super Bowls. He always comes up just a little shy in that big game. And that's why with Dak, the most important element to this entire career is going to be expectations. If you go in today knowing that you're going to have a guy who wins, maybe every third, fourth year gets to a Pro Bowl. He'll win you a division title every couple years. Half his career, he's going to get you in the playoffs in the competitive NFC. Then you're fine with Dak. But I don't think the Cowboys probably beat the Rams this weekend. And much like Alex Smith, the season ends with frustration, disappointment. Dak can't quite make the throw downfield. Dak can't quite stretch the field. Dak isn't quite willing to take the big risk. Anger and resentment comes from one thing, expectations. Take a deep breath know what Dak is. What Dak is very good. He's Alex Smith. If you expect more, you'll be very disappointed.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There's always been this confusion. The audience thinks we're rooting for this, we're rooting for that, we're rooting for big market, we're rooting for small market. The highest rated NBA finals ever, I think, was Michael Jordan against the Utah Jazz. And everybody was predicting nobody'd watch because Utah's a small city. But it was a great story. And it was Michael Jordan with a 100-degree temperature and the Utah Jazz with this pesky team that gave Jordan trouble, and there was all sorts of drama. Ratings come from stories, not market size. Okay, that's the reality of it, is that Boston and the Patriots, this has been a dynasty. Alabama is a dynasty. It's not always big markets that control sports or get the ratings. It's the best stories. So the Utah Jazz Michael Jordan finals was the highest rated finals of all time. Michael had played Barkley in the Suns. And you think that would be a huge rating because Barkley was a star. That was a little Utah Jazz. And so this weekend, if it was up to me that I was rooting for the best stories, because the best stories mean I'll get better ratings, the numbers inflate, more people watch our show, we can keep build a bigger staff. We're rooting for the most interesting stuff to happen. So when you get up Monday morning, you're like, yeah, let's see what Joy and Colin have to say. That's what we're rooting for. We're rooting for interesting. So let's go through all four games. What would be the most interesting outcome? Kansas City at Indianapolis. I believe the most interesting outcome is a shootout between the next Brady and Manning for the next 10 years. Patrick Mahomes and Andrew Luck are going to go toe-to-toe. And I want a shootout. And I want Kansas City winning. And I want the MVP winning. And I want Andy Reid winning. And I think it's 34-33. And this is Peyton Manning and Tom Brady early in their careers. Obviously, Mahomes younger than Andrew Luck. But I want Mahomes to be flashy and no-look passes and left-handed passes and be a contrast of styles. That Mahomes comes out, he is Brett Favre. He makes a real bonehead interception. He makes some mistakes. But he has two or three unbelievable all-time highlight plays. Meanwhile, Andrew Luck is 28 for 34. He is workmanlike, a contrast of styles. He is boring, and he is leading them down the field, and the clock runs out, and Kansas City wins a wild shootout, and we have a sense when the game is over, oh my God, we're going to see this a lot for the next decade. A Kansas City narrow win in a shootout gets everybody fired up, because we know the Chiefs are going to be around for a while. And we know the Colts with 9 draft picks on top of this and $100 million, they're going to be really good starting next year. But this one we give to Kansas City, and then they go back and forth. Okay, Dallas and the Rams. What's the most interesting outcome, Dallas and the Rams? Dallas upsets the Rams, and Dak is not good. Zeke runs for 150. The Cowboy defense is great, and Dak Prescott struggles. And for the next 4 months, 6 months, 9 months, what do we do with Dak? We're winning the division. We're winning playoff games. He's Alex Smith. What are we going to do if we pay him? And by the way, the glitzy Rams give me all sorts of stories. Sean McVay, 0-2, both at home, in the playoffs, both as a heavy favorite. And the shiny new techie toy, it doesn't really work in January. And Sean McVay is maybe a little more style than substance. I don't believe that to be true. But Kansas City in a shootout winning, Dak playing poorly and the Cowboys winning and getting to the NFC Championship, and an equally big story is the Rams are a lot of glitz. And they paid for all these big stars, and it ain't working, brother.
And all those teams that picked off that Sean McVay tree, you're going to be a little concerned.
How about New England Chargers? We said this yesterday. The Chargers don't beat New England. They beat them 33-14. Tom Brady is overwhelmed, sacked 6 times. The Chargers have better players. You start to question Belichick's arrogance, letting Brandon Cooks go, Josh Gordon, leaving Tom with nothing. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Dynasty is over. Tom Brady going to retire. Belichick getting heat. We have another offseason where we question the dynasty going forward. Not just a Charger win, but an overwhelming performance where the road-weary Chargers go on the road. You watch the game for 3.5 hours and come to the conclusion, it's over. Kind of like that Bama-Clemson thing. You're like, oh, Clemson's better. They got better coach. They got better structure. They got better players. You sit and watch that game and you think, oh, it's not even close. New England's got no players. That's the best outcome. We're talking about that for until Labor Day. Finally, Eagles Saints. Now, you're going to be confused by this. You know, I initially thought, well, Drew Brees wins. Everybody loves Drew Brees. But what if the story Sunday night is, holy crap, Philadelphia wins, close game, fourth and goal, Doug Peterson, Nick Foles again, pull one out of their you-know-what. And then after that, it would be the Eagles at the Cowboys for the NFC Championship. Yeah, I'll take that. Y'all take that. If Philadelphia wins another close situational game, let's see, they beat Atlanta in one of those, and they beat Brady in the Super Bowl in one of those, and they just beat the Bears in one of those, and they earlier this year beat the Texans in one of those, and they're getting into a habit that Doug Peterson, if he wins another one against a great quarterback, there's a Belichickian thing going on where it is not a coincidence. Philadelphia is simply smarter, owner, GM, coach. We've got a Wentz-Foles controversy. I think Philadelphia winning close. Colin, what about the Breeze, Brady, Super Bowl? Well, in my scenario, Brady doesn't get past the Chargers, so that's not going to happen. If you're asking me what's interesting on Monday, what is the most angst? Kansas City wins in a shootout. Dallas wins, but Dak struggles. The Patriots get absolutely rolled. And somehow, some way, on another fourth down situational moment, the Philadelphia Eagles shock the world. And we can't figure out what the hell's going on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Dallas is the first playoff team. This is really amazing. Without a starter over 30 years old in 31 years. And you would think that would guarantee that you're going to be really good. But I don't think it guarantees anything, and I'll tell you why. I think when Kansas City plays Indianapolis this weekend, you're going to see mostly the future of the AFC for the time being. I think both the Chiefs and the Colts have a great coach. Very, 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 very good transformational quarterback talents. Excellent front offices and good home field edges. I think Kansas City and Indianapolis and the AFC, you're going to see a lot of. I think in the AFC, you've got a lot of dysfunctional teams. Jacksonville, Miami, Buffalo, Cincy, Oakland, Cleveland. You got a lot of bad quarterbacks. Even quarterbacks that are okay, Lamar Jackson and Marcus Mariota, do we really, really buy them long-term? Pittsburgh and the New England Patriots have Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but they're old and going to retire pretty soon. I think the AFC is going to be led. I know what the AFC is going to look like for the next 8 years. You're going to see a lot of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and you're going to see a lot of Frank Reich and Andrew Luck. You're going to see a lot of that. The NFC, I got news for you. I don't know what I'm going to see for the next 5 years. Dallas has the best young roster, but they're limited at quarterback. Philadelphia has maybe the best combination of, if Carson Wentz is healthy, owner, GM, coach, and quarterback. The Los Angeles Rams have a lot of money, new stadium, free agent destination, and they certainly have the GM, the quarterback, and the coach right. The Chicago Bears have my vote for the coach of the year, so they got the coach right, and that defense is not only loaded, it's a bunch of kids, and they're not, except for Khalil Mack, you're not paying those guys much. Green Bay's got Aaron Rodgers. I'm not giving up on Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. They usually figure it out and end up as a playoff team, and I've told you this before, I think San Francisco is going to be a thorn for the Rams. When Jimmy Garoppolo comes back and Kyle Shanahan, I think they're going to win that division at least every other year for the next 10 years, not to mention the Vikings, the Saints, and the Carolina. You know, Carolina's got Cam and Ron Rivera, and they got good Luke Kuechly, and the Saints have Drew and Sean, and Mickey Loomis drafts well. You know, I didn't mention Atlanta, Minnesota. You got real players there. So the NFC, you've got bigger cities, more revenue, better free agent markets except for Green Bay, more competitive, better quarterbacks, better organizations. In the AFC, I got a lot of dysfunction. I got a lot of bad owners. I got a lot of bad quarterbacks. I got a lot of bad cultures. The Cowboy talent is remarkable. I mean, it really is. First playoff team without a starter over 30 in 31 years. It is an incredibly special team, but I don't think it guarantees anything in the NFC. It's sometimes when you compare the NFC to the AFC, AFC is kind of dysfunctional. There's a lot of junk in the AFC. It's not a lot of junk. I think the Bruce Arians hire in Tampa, because I think Tampa's kind of junk in the NFC. I think they right that ship. I think they're pretty competitive next year. I think Bruce Arians, Jameis Winston, Todd Bowles, they got a good roster. I think Tampa next year will be a real tough out. And maybe you could argue the same in the AFC with Cleveland, with Baker and Dorsey in their roster. They're going to be a tougher out. I think they will be. But I know what the AFC is going to look like. It's going to be a lot of Andrew Luck and Patrick Mahomes for the next 10 years. I guarantee that. Coach, front office, quarterback, I guarantee that. No idea what – I don't even know what the NFC East looks like next year. Seriously. I have no idea about the NFC. If the Giants figure out the quarterback thing, Saquon Barkley, Shermer the offensive guy, OBJ, watch out.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff from the 3 and Out podcast, brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. You like Colin's show? You'll like mine. I'm talking playoff football, baby. Cliff Kingsbury, pretty polarizing. I'm more bullish than most. Tell you about it. The Green Bay Packers, I'm selling all my stock. Bruce Arians, I'm so glad that he's back in the NFL. Talk it all on this week's 3 and Out podcast. Also, go over every playoff game with me, John Middlecoff.
Let's go to our friend Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback via the Cowherd Global Satellite Network. Listen, we all know what's happening. What I think is funny in this, Albert, is all these organizations love their hires, even though they have no head coaching experience. Some are hiring people like Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, 1 year of play calling. But yet in New York, they're banging on Adam Gase. And my takeaway is, excuse me, but he got to the playoffs, beat New England a couple of times, has been hired multiple times as a coordinator. Adam Gase, to me, is the one hire I like, and it's the one getting the heat. What do you make of it?
I think it's a smart move by the Jets, honestly. This is about developing the quarterback and getting the most out of Sam Darnold, particularly while he's on his rookie contract. They got probably 3 more years of that. And to me, I look at this and I say to myself, okay, here you have a guy who has gotten career years out of Peyton Manning, Jay Cutler, Ryan Tannehill, went to the playoffs with Ryan Tannehill as a head coach, and recreated an offense on the fly in 2011 with Tim Tebow at the helm. And so if you want offensive creativity and you want a guy who can work with a quarterback, you've got that with Adam Gase. Plus, you got 3 years of NFL head coaching experience. He's the only coach to bring the Miami Dolphins to the playoffs this decade. Things weren't pretty at the end. I think you have to hope he learned from being part of the Discord in that organization at the very end. But there are lots of pieces to like there with the Adam Gase hire in New York.
Okay, I can't talk Darnold without Baker Mayfield. I'm a little reluctant on Freddie Kitchens. Never been a high school head coach. Only been a coordinator for 8 games. I don't think he would have gotten necessarily a coordinator job around the league. I don't like when my quarterback is learning how to be an NFL quarterback, hiring a coach who's learning how to be a head coach. I don't love this, but I was told John Dorsey wanted somebody. He didn't want Greg Williams. He doesn't want Hugh Jack. He don't want pushback. And this is John Dorsey's team. I mean, that's kind of what I feel.
Here's the key, Colin, okay? And I know, the fact that he ran the offense the way he did, that's a huge plus. The fact that he developed Baker Mayfield the way he did, first as his position coach, then as his coordinator, that's another huge plus. But the key word here, and remember this one, is unifier. That's the way that everyone in the building felt about Freddie Kitchens, that he could be a unifier inside that building. Even Greg Williams, as they started winning, like even him, you look at him and you say, is he going to be combative down the line? Are we going to have the problems? And then you got to roll it back and look at the history since Jimmy Haslam bought the team. The first regime he put in place, Rob Chudzinski, Mike Lombardi, Joe Banner, that blew up. The next group was Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, that blew up. And then again, there were internal problems when you had Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown. And so I think the quarterback part of this is important. I think the fact that he proved he could run an NFL offense over the last 8 weeks of the season, that's important too. But to me, and based on what I've heard, the most important thing here is that they projected Freddie Kitchens to be a unifier inside that building. And if you look at the problems that they've had in Jimmy Haslam's 7 years of ownership, you can understand why.
I got to address something. I think I may have talked about it with you. Antonio Brown is as gifted a wide receiver as this league has. And we have clearly, Albert, in the last year, due to rule changes, quarterback wide receiver, it has been elevated in the league. So this is a transformational talent in his prime. The Roonies, who are patient, tolerant, and quiet, came out yesterday saying, I don't think it's going to work. I'm just going to throw a couple things at you. New England gets rolled this weekend, and they come to the conclusion, we got to give Tom help. I think Antonio Brown works in a lot of spots. You don't build around him, but man, I can't believe somebody wouldn't trade for him, Albert. What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, first thing you got to take into account is his contract, and I'll give that to you in two different ways. Okay, there's 3 years and $39 million left on his contract. For most teams, that's going to make him attractive because you look at what the top receivers are making. It's somewhere between $16 and $18 million a year. Odell Beckham's in that range. Mike Evans is in that range. Sammy Watkins is in that range. And so to have Antonio Brown, presuming he'd be okay with going forward with the contract the way that it is, that'd be a very, very attractive number to a lot of teams, but not in New England. And here's the reason why. While you still have certain guys on your roster who have agreed to take less, it's very hard, and it's been historically very hard for them to take on guys who are getting paid premium prices. Look at what Tom Brady's making, about $15 million a year. Now, I'm assuming they'll amend that after the year, but for right now, it's $15 million a year. Gronkowski's making $10 million a year. Julian Edelman, who's been fantastic for them, is making about $6 million a year. So you look at what those guys are making, the premium guys in their roster, the salary structure in New England is completely different than it is in most other places. And so to bring in a guy like this, you'd almost have to blow up what you're doing. They wanted Brandon Cooks back, but this is the reason why they couldn't bring him back, was because to make it happen, they'd have to blow up their salary structure. And so that's why I think Antonio Brown would be a little bit of a tough fit in New England. The other thing, and Colin, you know this, over their history, New England has always bought low on these guys, whether it was Randy Moss coming in on the deal that he came in on. If you want to look at when they that summer when they brought in Chad Johnson and Albert Haynesworth, they've always bought low on these guys, and that gives them a modicum of control. I think if you buy high in a guy like this, that premium number, you don't have the control over the player that New England likes to have.
So the Rams-Dallas game is intriguing. We know that Jerry Jones has said, I love me some Dak, I love Jason Garrett. We all know that. And we all know that Sean McVay is very bright and Goff is the future. But if the Rams lose this weekend, there is a little shine off Sean McVay potentially.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of went all in Los Angeles with, you know, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh. If the Rams lost this weekend, do you think it would slow down the Sean McVay coaching tree thing? And that some, and then, because I feel like there's this tsunami of Sean McVay rolling over the league.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it would be, I don't think it should change the way anyone looks at Sean McVay. Best point differential in the league the last 2 years, and the best record in the league over the last 2 years, tied with the Patriots and the Saints. And you look at where the Rams are coming from, Sean McVay has done a fantastic job by any measure. I also think there's a little more to what we're seeing than just Sean McVay. I know a lot of people, you can trace them back to Sean McVay and everything else. I think that this is about owners and where owners are in the league right now. And it's harder to draw a rating than it used to be. It's harder to draw a fan to a stadium than it used to be.
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of owners in the league that watched that game at the end of November between the Rams and the Chiefs and pointed at the television and said, give me that. And so I think what you're seeing now is an overreach for guys that have backgrounds in those sorts of offenses. It's a little more difficult when you look at Andy Reid's tree because Doug Peterson was already picked from there. Matt Nagy was already picked from there. Whereas when you look at Sean McVay and the people that have worked with him traditionally, they're young and they came up with him. And so I think that part of this is, you know, an owner looking at not just winning and losing, but the entertainment product and saying, I want what they've got in Kansas City and Los Angeles. And then they look at Sean McVay's tree and they say, okay, well, this guy isn't perfect. That guy isn't perfect. I think ultimately 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to find out that some of these hires were overreaches.
Yep.
But I think there's certainly an element of entertainment that goes along with the winning and losing that owners want right now.
Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback. I mean, the guy is just available to us every time we call with all sorts of good stuff and information. It's going to be a great weekend. Read his stuff. Yep. I do. Senior NFL reporter. Albert, thank you so much again.
You got it, Colin.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, let's go to Greg Jennings via the Cowher Global Satellite Network. Decade in the NFL, Super Bowls, Pro Bowls. Let's talk about the Packers, because Cliff Kingsbury, I didn't love the hire, but I do like Vance Joseph now, a grown-up defensive. Sark's been in college and pro. I feel better today. The Green Bay thing with Matt LaFleur, Greg, he's been a play caller for 1 year. It wasn't a great year in Tennessee. I don't, you know, again, people think I'm anti-Packer. I don't love it. It feels weird to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't love it. I think it was a curveball, a huge curveball that no one saw coming. And quite frankly, when you look at why they're saying that he was the interesting and intriguing hire, and I'm sure that this isn't just everything that they put their eggs in the basket because of, but it was known that he was going to keep Mike Pettine as a defensive coordinator. So we like that about him. And I thought to myself, if you're going to hire a guy, just hire Mike Pettine and then get your own offensive coordinator. Why would you bring in a whole head coach because he said he's going to keep your defensive coordinator? Like, I don't know how much they're really so obviously they are sold on him. But I have some red flags, and he's going to have a huge, huge microscope on him, like magnifying glass. It's going to be an interesting year for the Green Bay Packers.
By the way, let me just ask you about the young guys. Is that, I mean, a veteran NFL player is 34. Some of these coaches are 34. There is this sense that if you ever had a beer with Sean McVay, you get a job interview. What do you make of the whole McVay tree?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. You have a young coach who has been around great coaches for a long time in Sean McVay, the John Grudens, and those type of offensive minds. But he still hasn't proven to win in the playoffs. However, you have all these organizations who loves what he has provided for a young team with a young quarterback, with a fresh mindset offensively and an innovative mindset. And it's intriguing. And so everyone's looking at this in Sean McVay like, well, if they did it with McVay, maybe we can do it with our hires. So you see all these kind of random hires that no one ever saw coming. But one thing that McVay understood, which is what you were talking about before you had me on with Kingsbury, is he accompanied his staff with Wade Phillips, a proven defensive mind head coach who had been around for a long time, to kind of balance what he was getting ready to do. And I like that about what Sean McVay has been able to do. Can these other coaches mimic that and create a staff that makes them better, that pulls even more out of them? We'll see.
Yeah, the Sean McVay coaching tree is definitely more of a weed than it is an actual tree at this point. So I look at your picks. It says here you like the Saints, they're favored. You like the Patriots, they're favored. You like the Rams, they're favored. But you are going to go with the dog on the Colts. And this is the pick I said earlier on our Blazing Five is, I'll take Kansas City, but I kind of feel like we got ourselves a shootout here. Why do you like the Colts?
Couple of reasons why I like the Colts. The one main reason is because of the way that they're playing and the quarterback play that they're getting out of Andrew Luck. And defensively, they look really, really good. Making a lot of plays for that team and that offense, getting the ball back into Luck's hands. But secondly is, back in 2011, 2012 season, we went 15-1.
Yeah.
The year after we won the Super Bowl, we had one of the most high-end scoring offenses in all of football, if not the high-end scoring offense in all of football, could put up a lot of points. However, our defense couldn't stop anyone, but they could create turnovers. And when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they remind me of who we were that year. They can put up a lot of points, but their defense not really able to stop opponents, but they will take the ball away. In the playoffs, that all went for nothing because as an offense, we had to carry that team and we didn't produce the way our defense needed us to produce and how we had produced all year. And the Kansas City Chiefs have a small margin of error because their defense can't stop offense like the Indianapolis Colts. So this is why I'm picking the Colts.
Yeah, you know, people that I, even Vegas, people, a lot of people like the Colts this weekend, which I love Andy Reid, and I'm going to lean Kansas City because I think Andy off a bye is really good. Okay, so I said this earlier. When people get upset, whether you're a parent, you're a dad, you're a mom, you're a player, you're a coach, anywhere in life, if you get upset, it's generally because something didn't meet expectations. You go to the airport, you're mad at the airline because you're 15 minutes late, right? The plane? Okay. If you look at Dak and you line up all the traits of Dak, mobile, not a great arm, not a big risk taker, a grown-up, low risk, mobile, he really is Alex Smith. And everybody goes, oh, well, Alex Smith has been 8 straight winning seasons, 3 Pro Bowls, 3 division titles, 5 playoff appearances. If I was a Cowboy fan, I would sign up for Alex Smith's career from Dak. I think the problem in Dallas is Cowboys have higher expectations than what is reality. I think Dak is Alex Smith. I think they play alike. Dak's a little heavier. I mean, is that a weird comparison? Because I think the Cowboys are going to go into the playoffs this weekend and lose. And the question's going to be after the game, you can't win the big one with Dak, which is what everybody's been saying for 9 years with Alex Smith. Your thoughts?
I don't disagree with you. I can definitely see that why you would draw that comparison. Alex Smith always needed guys around him to make sure that he was able to kind of be the best Alex Smith we were able to see. And the same goes with Dak Prescott. However, I think their mentalities are a little different. I think Dak Prescott thinks and believes that he's more than a just Alex Smith. Now, from our vantage point, yeah, we can see that comparison because his team has supported him while in Dak Prescott's mind, he believes that I'm better than what everybody's giving me credit for. I've won in this league in the regular season. Now I've won a game in the playoffs. If he continues to win, why would he not see himself as one of the elite quarterbacks or believe himself to be one of those elite quarterbacks? He has every right to feel that way. I just don't think he is personally. But to your point, I agree. That's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, finally, the Pittsburgh Steelers never – the Rooney family is patient, tolerant, quiet. They came out yesterday and said, yeah, we don't think this Antonio Brown thing is going to work out. Antonio's obviously a 100-catch guy, dozen touchdowns, 1,500 yards. He may not work in Pittsburgh. He works all over this league. You don't think New England – I mean, I'm sitting to myself thinking, where would he land – Pittsburgh probably wouldn't send him to New England, right? Where do you think he – I mean
– No. No. That's like giving your big brother something else that he can beat you up with, and you know it will beat you up. Like, absolutely not. Pittsburgh has been trying to get over that New England Patriot hump for years, and to send one of their best players, if not their best player outside of Ben Roethlisberger – over to Big Brother? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That will never happen.
Okay, but do you think Antonio, they said basically they're going to trade him. I mean, you know, you ran a franchise. I mean, it's funny. I wouldn't build around him, and I'm not into diva receivers. But that's my problem with Odell Beckham. I'm not going to build around him. I like having Odell on my team. I don't have a problem with Odell. I like somebody that can make 100 catches. Would you bring Antonio on a team?
I would. I would definitely bring Antonio Brown on a team. And let me say this, Odell Beckham, he gets, in my opinion, he gets a really bad rap because he's never had like character issues. He's never had these run-ins with teammates and with coaches. his things has always been the extra antics on the football field because of his playmaking ability. It's never been anything that we question off the field or with teammates. So let's leave Odell Beckham out of this. Antonio Brown, however, completely different player. What they provide is similar, but what he brings to the table from a personality standpoint is a lot greater and a lot more to handle. And yeah. I think when you're thinking about surrounding him with a young quarterback and a young team, you got to be leery of the influence he'll have on that team.
That's a very fair point. Antonio with a veteran quarterback, a Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, a veteran guy who can handle it. I'm not throwing him up there with Josh Rosen. Good point. Greg Jennings, who is dressed for Minnesota weather. It's only 32 degrees today, so that ain't bad. January standard in Minnesota. Good talking to you, bud.
Absolutely. It's a bad hair day. A lot going on. We'll talk about it.